What's up, everybody, and welcome to Truth with Tara. I'm Tara Simon, and today I have actress, producer, director, New York Times bestselling author, and most importantly, wife and mother of three, Candace Cameron Bure. Candace, thank you so much for being on today.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for being here. So in case you guys who are watching have been living under a rock, Candace is known and beloved by millions across the world for her role as DJ Tanner in Full House and, of course, the sequel, Fuller House, thereafter. She is the queen of Christmas on Hallmark and Great American Family. She's also a producer on Great American Family and is an amazing faith-based just person in general. I love, Candace, how on your website, you spend more time talking about your faith than really what the website's about. As I read, I was like, wow, the margins here are like this versus this. And I just thought, wow, that actually speaks volumes just about who you are. So I want to get into a little bit of like your early years on Full House first and kind of chronologically go forward just for the sake of order. So walk me through like the auditions for DJ Tanner. Did you know like or have any inkling of the success, the potential success of this show?
No inklings whatsoever, because when you audition, that's all it is. It's an audition for a potential pilot that may or may not get picked up by a network. Like, you never even know. Even if you get a part, you might tape the pilot and then it just goes away after that. So When I first got the audition, I'd auditioned for lots of things. At the ripe old age of 10, I'd already been in the business for 5 years, pretty regularly. And I had my first audition, which went okay, not great, because the casting director actually told me that I was just okay. But then
really?
She said, but we'll bring you back. We'll bring you back. And I walked
okay,
out.
But
I was
we'll bring
so,
you back.
I was so upset. And my mom was like, what happened? And I said, she just said I was okay and I wanted to do a good job.
Right.
And the casting director said to my mom, no. She was fine. I'm bringing her back for a callback. And I started crying. And my mom goes, do you want to redo it for her? And I said, yes, please. Can I redo it? So I went back into the room with the casting director and she was very kind. She was like, sure, honey, go ahead. Like, just give me a little more energy this time. And I was like, okay. And I did it. And she's like, that was great. Okay, we're going to bring you back. Like, it was very cute, but I'll never forget it. Cause it was one of the first times I ever like felt bad when someone just was like, it's fine. I was like,
yeah.
No, I want to be good.
Wow.
So anyway.
And you were 10.
I was 10. But yeah,
okay.
So that's what happened. Had no idea. Ended up booking that part on Full House. And yeah, I mean, it became a massive success over the years.
Huge. Global.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Cult classic. I grew up on it myself. And actually, thinking back on the episodes that I remember most, I too was like a kid performer, but mostly singing until I went on to do Broadway. And then I actually acted on stage like all the time. However, when I was a teen, I was like, you know, I've always had to kind of work out and watch what I eat to look good. I've never been that string bean who's just naturally, I just
same,
eat what I want.
Same.
Same for you?
Yes.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, I've been working out at the gym since I was like 13. And so I remember specifically there was an episode that you did as DJ Tanner where she had a body image issue and she was on the bike and she was starving herself. And your dad on the show, Bob Saget, in real life was like really concerned and worried about you. And it was like this whole episode about that. And I remember being impacted by that even as a young girl, like seeing myself through you, DJ Tanner, was like, wow, I'm not the only one. And I also got to see how unhealthy it was by watching what I didn't realize I was doing. And it really helped heal a lot of that for me. So you didn't know that. And I'm sure that that's the case for a lot of other episodes and people all over the world. So thank you for that. I mean, now that I get a chance
welcome.
To meet you, thanks.
You're
yeah,
welcome.
Lots of really cool and memorable episodes. And then, of course, how many years later was it that you went from Full House to then, I mean, you had a whole hiatus. We're going to get into that. But it was recent, right, that Fuller House came to be?
Yeah. So basically like 30 years later, we picked
up
Fuller House. So that ran from 2015 to 2020. Yeah, five seasons.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was five seasons.
Yeah, five
Again,
seasons.
What a huge success.
Yeah.
Now, I bet life was really different for you to kind of get back into that whole filming seasons of shows again. Tell me how that works for our viewers who don't know. Like, obviously, you don't go in every single week, right, to film seasons. You kind of batch film. Or am I wrong?
Well, you're kind of a little of both. So when you do a sitcom, it's almost like a school year. You kind of start in July and end in April. And okay. So typically you work 3 weeks on and then get 1 week off.
Oh.
3 weeks on, okay. 1 week off, 3 weeks on. And it takes 1 week to film one episode.
One whole week.
Yeah.
Wow. And yes. The episodes were how long?
30 minutes.
Oh, and my
They're all taped in front of a live audience. So it's a little bit like theater in that sense. So we basically would rehearse for 3 days. And then we would pre-tape a lot of scenes just to make sure that, because there are young kids on our show or animals, you make sure that you have the stuff in the can. That's what they say, yeah. That they're taped in case it doesn't work in front of the live audience. You have that pre-taped. And then on the fifth day, on Friday, a live studio audience of about 200 people would come in. And then we would perform the whole show.
Wow. And did you have to perform it more than one time to get the live stuff in the can? Yeah.
Always.
How many times?
So I know for a 30-minute show, for a live audience to sit there, it takes about 5 hours.
Oh, my gosh. And the same audience stays? They don't rotate them out?
Nope. So they stay the whole time. They give them a couple bathroom breaks. They give them a snack and some water, some drinks. And there's always an audience warm-up person. So there's someone that entertains them in between while we're changing costumes or moving sets. But yeah, we would usually tape the first scene through probably 3 times. And then if we needed any little pickups for any specific lines, we would do that. And then we would move on to the second scene. So that's why it takes so long.
That is so fascinating. I never knew that, actually. Mm-hmm. You really are. It's like live theater.
Yeah.
Only you get to like go back and do
it
again.
You get to stop and start.
Yeah, you stop and start. But you know what's actually really fascinating to me that you just said is that there's an audience warm-up person. Like, that's a career.
It's a big-time career.
What's
time.
It called?
So Robin Williams actually started as an audience warm-up person. Of course, he was doing other comedy and all that, but a lot of comedians are audience warm-up people because they're telling jokes, they're entertaining the crowd.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm learning so much from you right now. This is so good. So you first discovered acting as a kid, like around 10 or before then, or that was that
at
your
5 years old, I started.
Oh, five.
Yeah.
Five. And what was the very first thing you ever did?
I did a commercial for an insurance company, and I don't think it ever even aired.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah, but I did a lot of commercials before.
Okay.
Way before Full House, but when I was like 5, 6, 7 years old, that was predominantly, I did all kinds of like toy commercials. I did like Cabbage Patch dolls and Care Bears and, you know, all the things back in the 80s.
Yes,
and then I did
a lot of
fast food commercials, McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all those things.
Wow, then amazing.
Moved into television.
Yeah.
In terms of series. Yeah. Even before Fuller House, I was on some other shows, many of them for just a couple of episodes, or they could just be one episode, but did a lot of sitcom work before I landed the part on Full House.
And your parents, I'm sure that they were, in order for you to be as involved as you were very supportive of you and your dream?
Yeah. The funny thing is, it wasn't even my dream. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and we started in the business because my mom had a friend, and her son was in the business and on a TV show, and she kept telling my mom, oh, your kids are so cute. You let me take their picture to my agent. And my mom was like, sure, fine, go ahead. And that was my two sisters and my brother. And so my mom just asked us, do you guys want to try being in commercials? And we were all like, yeah, sure. And the agent took us. And so my parents kind of said like, hey, you can either try auditioning for commercials, you can take soccer, you can take singing, dance lessons. You have to pick some kind of extracurricular activity. So pick which one you want. And that's how it kind of started. And so I really enjoyed doing commercials, but it wasn't a dream of mine. But I worked a lot. I kept booking and booking. And then by the time I was 10 and was on Full House, I loved it. And probably by 12, I was like, okay, I don't think I want to do anything else. Now this is what I want to do.
I love how you had this spirit, though, even as a young kid, of just walking through open doors. Like, hey, if it's working, I'm going to do it. Sure, it's not like I hate it. I love it. It might not feel like my calling now, but, like, I'm getting yeses, so I'm just going to say yes to the yes, right?
Yeah.
But, like, before 12, did you have a dream? Like, what was your childhood dream if it wasn't acting?
I think about that sometimes, and I don't remember having a dream like, oh, I want to be a doctor or I want to be a princess or an astronaut. Yeah. I don't remember having anything that I really desired to do that much, at least by five. So once I started acting, I was like, this is fun.
Sure, I'll keep doing this. Yeah. I got you. You're just a normal kid and just wanted to play and have fun and... That's so cool. I love how sometimes things choose us, you know, even when we're not necessarily looking for
that, it. That's it. That's exactly it for me. I feel like it chose me, or God chose it for me and just opened the doors. Yeah.
And what I love most about all of that is the way that you're using that platform now. And so fast forward to you becoming this childhood celebrity. You're a teenager now and you're just in the throes of it. Like, you know, you probably can't go to the grocery store at this point without being recognized and having people want your autograph.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So how was that for you? I mean, I know that I read in your bio that you weren't like the typical child star who like got hooked on drugs and was super disobedient. No. You were still very eager to please. And what was it like being grounded while still being famous? Like, how did you balance the two?
I think that's just it. You don't realize that you are balancing the two because my parents just made it that way, especially when we were home. We went, and I say we because my brother was also on his show, Growing Pains, at the same time I was on Full House. So there were two kids on these sitcoms.
Candace,
did you just make that connection?
It was today, now. I did not even.
That was the best face ever. I love being on your podcast just for this reaction that I got. The live, like, you just made the connection that
I
Kirk and I are brother and sister.
Kurt Cameron, of course. I'm so embarrassed right now. I'm going to get such slack for this. How could you not know? You didn't know it was The Sounds of Silence Disturbed, and you didn't know it was Kurt Cameron. I'm like, I'm going to be the chicken of the sea girl for podcast. That's what's happening right now to me right now. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. I completely lost all composure.
No, there's
Kurt Cameron's her brother. I didn't know, just for the record. Yes, they're related. Growing Pains. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Keep moving forward. You had two child stars in the house.
Yep.
Please tell Kurt I'm sorry. I just didn't even.
Trust me, he will not be offended.
Okay, good. Seems like a nice guy. Yeah. So then you both were that way. And like, wow. And so your other two siblings, though, were not.
Right. They didn't pursue acting. And so And that was just it. When we came home from work, our home was very much a normal home because two sisters were there and my mom and dad were like, you still got to do chores. You got to take out the trash. You got to do the dishes. Your homework has to be done.
Yes.
And so it never really felt like we were balancing celebrity. It felt more like we were balancing opportunities that we had that a lot of typical kids didn't get to have, like traveling to do press or be on talk shows or even game shows and do some fun things like that. But even with that, my parents always made sure we went as a family. So if I got invited somewhere, my parents would say, we could go there if you give us five tickets because the whole family's going to go. And so my sisters were always included in all of those types of things and could go whenever they wanted to. But also, again, my parents made sure that we were grounded and we didn't forget who we were and that family was always most important. And my mom, my mom and dad didn't let us do a lot of the things that typical teenage kids get the opportunity to do in Hollywood, which is why I'm probably, we didn't get into normal drugs and alcohol and partying and all that kind of stuff, because we weren't allowed to go. My parents were like, hard no.
Wow.
Not going. And that was that.
That's so good. So really, your home and the way that you were raised was the anchor that kept you grounded in the midst of all that. And I really love that they included your siblings, because I can imagine that that would have been very difficult for them to feel like in your shadow and,
absolutely,
and have tensions there. Yep. And with four kids, two of them literally being childhood stars and continue to do that. I mean, you guys have had both. Now that I know, you both have had such long careers in just a beautiful, like, organic growth type of way, that slow and steady, just constantly upward trajectory that I think that is a through line of blessing in both of your lives. And I think it comes from that anchor of your parents. So job well done to them. That's amazing. And are you close with all of your family still?
Very close.
That's so good.
Very close. Yeah.
I love it. That's so good. Is DJ Tanner your favorite role that you've ever played, or is there one that's kind of trumps it?
Oh, by far. By far.
She's your favorite.
She's my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah, she embodied my whole childhood, and then I got to come back and play her as an adult, and it was the biggest gift of my life. So forever, she will be my favorite. She's very much a part of me.
Yeah. You stopped, though. You met Val when you were young, like Joey Gladstone introduced you to your betrothed, your husband, right?
Yes,
your groom.
He did.
And you were young. Wait, were you 19?
I was 18 when I met
Val.
You were
18. Okay. Yeah. Wow. And you got married at how old?
20.
Oh, goodness. Okay. And you became a mom at?
22.
Wow.
Just
okay.
Bam, bam, bam. I went from working full time on a sitcom. We ended when I was 18 years old, and I had met Val at the very end of that season. And I just transitioned into a new season of life that I was so happy about. And I think that is one of the big reasons, too, that I didn't struggle after ending the show.
Mm.
Because that's hard to work your whole life on a show, have a real family and a place that you're going to every day, and then it just disappears. And at that stage of life, it can go either way.
Right.
Because you're coming into your own as an adult. And so I feel very blessed in that way that I met Val right at the end of that, and it was a seamless transition into, hey, I'm going to be a wife, I'm going to have children and a family. And it, not that it was smooth sailing the whole way, it totally wasn't.
Sure, sure.
But it was a beautiful way to end the show and transition into something incredible, which was my family.
Open a new chapter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you really stopped as if you really even never started. Like, you were like full. Mm-hmm. And that's something I notice about you, Candace. What you do, you really truly do all in, like, to the best of your ability. It's that 10-year-old wanting to do over the audition all over again because she's gotta get it in, you know?
Yeah.
And so you really took on motherhood as your full-time, high-calling job. And from what I see, based on your kids, I mean, Natasha was even on The Voice. I mean, your kids are also thriving. You really just took that role on and owned it just as big as you owned DJ Tanner. Up to that point, how long did you stop acting and take on the role of motherhood before you got back into it again?
Yeah, I took about 10 years off.
Wow.
I dabbled a tiny, tiny bit when Natasha was a baby, and very soon realized that I couldn't do both, and I didn't want to do both. I didn't want to try to audition or work while she was really little, and that solidified my decision to just take it all off and raise my kids. And so for 10 years, I did that full time and loved it. Again, there were difficulties in that season for me, just as motherhood is, and parenthood is challenging. But it grew me so much. It grew me in my relationship with the Lord, and it really prepared me not only in the outpouring of love and to raise my children into great human beings, but prepared me to where I am today, having come back into the industry. If I didn't have that 10 years to spend time with God and allow him to mold me into the woman that I am today, it, mm-hmm. I'm sure my life and the trajectory of my career would be very, very different.
Wow. It's such a beautiful death to self that you allowed to happen. And I'm sure that there were invitations within that 10 years that made you go, ooh, say no to that one.
There
hurts.
Were a few.
Yeah. Do you remember one in particular you want to share?
I remember. So I had a manager, my managers at the time, who I'm still with today. We've been together over 25 years. But
amazing.
This whole time during a break, I didn't want to work, but they just kind of hung in there with me in the sense that I would get calls from like VH1, where are they now? E! Entertainment, uh-huh. we're going back into the 80s and 90s. And they'd have like these fun shows. So I would get asked to do that kind of stuff once mm-hmm. in a while. And they would, my managers would field those calls for me, even though I wasn't working.
So nice.
So one day we got a call and they straight up offered me a series regular on a television show. And I honestly forget the name of it, but it was all female driven and it wasn't Army Wives, but it was something close to that.
I loved Army Wives.
Yeah, that was a good show. It wasn't that show, but it was one kind of similar. And they just offered the part, and my husband and I talked about it. And I'm like, I mean, this door just opened, and I should probably walk through it.
Right.
And I said yes. And then within about 3 or 4 days, really thinking about it, I just had a pit in my stomach, and I did not feel good about it. Wow. And I hadn't signed the contract yet, but the papers were sitting there. And wow. I just broke down and I was like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And my managers actually made me call production, like call the producers of the show and say, I'm so sorry that I said yes, but I'm going to say no now because of just my personal life. Like, I don't think I'm ready to go back to work. And
wow.
You know, I think about opportunities like that because that show ran for several years. And I'm like, but looking back, I'm like, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm doing fine. But,
absolutely.
You know, you see some things along the way and you're like, what if I give that up? Maybe it's never going to come back around. But
yeah, that FOMO, right?
Yeah.
But
totally.
I think that's where your faith plays such a huge role because you're so attuned to that pit in your stomach feeling and you have a track record of listening to it and actually reaping benefits of listening to it. And I find that when people do that the first time, it's the most scary. But when you can look back on your track record and be like, I've listened to the voice of the Holy Spirit many times. And when I do, it always goes well. It's easier than as you move forward. It doesn't make it completely easy, but it's a lot less scary. And I feel like you
absolutely
really do that. Yeah. And therefore, the FOMO part of it is like a feeling and it's real and you admit it. But mm-hmm. then it's like, okay, but like you said, I'm fine. I'm exactly where I needed to be. And we're moving on with life.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Something I also recently learned about you before interviewing you is that you and your husband, you make wine.
We do.
Like, that's okay. So something I just love about you, I really admire that you know, a lot of people that are great at one thing, they just like, I kind of stick to that, but you've got your hands in so many things. You're mm-hmm. an author. You have your own clothing line, right? Like you have all of these things. You're an actress, you're a producer now on Great American Family. And you also make wine with your husband in Napa Valley. Like, what happened there? Like, why wine? And how long has that been going on? And I don't know.
I don't talk as much about the wine because it really is my husband's business.
Okay.
I just have the benefits of drinking
the
incredible, incredible wine. But yeah, so my husband was a professional hockey player in the NHL for 12 years. And then when he retired, like most sports people, you need a second career.
Sure.
And we are big foodies. We love great food and we love good wine. And we took a trip. We took a couple of trips to Italy. And then our first time to Napa Valley, my husband just looked at me and he was like, this is it. This is what I want to do. And so he dove right in for his second career, learned how to make wine, got invested in it. And we have been making high quality small batch wine It's a luxury brand, but we've been making it for almost 20 years now.
Wow. What's it called?
Beret Family Wines.
Beret Family Wines.
Yeah.
And how you can't old
find
was your...
It, you can't find it anywhere. So if anyone's like, where can I pick it up? I'm like, you can't.
You can't. You no can't. One gets it.
You can't.
I mean, there's I kind of want to know where I can get some. Like, you can't buy it? I know you guys sell it somewhere.
We do, but it's mailing list. So, and there's a very long wait to get on the mailing list because we are under 1,000 cases. And the release letters go out. And if you're on the mailing list, you have a couple of days basically to purchase it. And then it gets sold out very quickly. So that's why there's probably about a 5-year waiting list to get on the list.
Oh my gosh, he's like in high demand with this wine. Candace, what do I got to do to get a bottle of that stuff?
I know. You might just need to come over to my house one time and we can open a bottle.
Free voice lesson for a bottle of wine. I do work for drinks, wine in particular.
Okay.
So
are you offering voice lessons?
Yes, I'm absolutely. Okay. Well, we might have to get into that for a second. I might have a scary question for you later. Question though, because this is very inspiring, I think, to a lot of people who are older in life, who may have tried something and it's not working. How old was Val, is your husband's name, right?
Yeah.
How old was he when he did this second career do-over?
So I think probably about 35.
Wow. I mean,
which sounds so young, but you know, played professionally since he was 17.
Yeah, but no, not to start to start completely like from scratch a second career. It's not that young, and I think that a lot of people watching this should lean into that. Like, if you're in a place where you're not loving what you're doing or it's not reaping what you're sowing, like, it's okay to pivot. And while he knew he had an expiration date on his first career, not knowing what he was going to do after and then seeking that out and being in that uncomfortable place long enough to say, ah, I found it. And now I'm going to go full into that. It's so cool. And look at him now. I love that.
Yep.
And somehow I will be getting a bottle of that wine. So if you could change, going back to acting or the entertainment industry in general, if you could change one thing about the entertainment industry, what would that thing be?
Oh, that's a good question.
It's tough. There's probably more than one, but...
I know. I feel like there's a lot. I could go a million different routes with this answer, but what would I want to change? Okay, this might not be the best. This is probably, not the best answer, but in all honesty, because I have a company and produce a lot of movies I'm in and not in, I just produce films. I just wish it weren't so expensive. I wish I could change that. I wish I could change that it doesn't cost $10 million to make a really great film. You know, it's hard when we do them on these lower budgets. I know that's more of a technical answer that most people aren't interested in hearing.
I think it's great and real. Yeah. Because it's kind of...
It's just where I'm at in my life.
Yeah. Well, on the back end, on that producer's role, you know, it can seem very limiting. And then, you know, okay, I don't have the funds. So now I got to go find executive producers. Now I got to go find investors. And that's a whole other job. Like that's a whole complete other venture. So on that more back end executive level, I do feel that a lot. Maybe as an actress relating to more people, what do you think is also like a hot button issue?
I don't know. I'm thinking of this and I don't even know what my answer is, in the sense that there's always a debate, and maybe I'll just throw the question to you, because do you feel like actors should be role models?
Yes.
Or you do? Okay.
Point
or
blank.
Can you enjoy their work without caring about their personal lives or who they are on a personal level?
Here's my thought to that. I'm going to put it to music. There are so many, and when I say so many, I mean so many
talented, amazing singers all over the world who are like working in grocery stores, holding a baby on their lap in the middle of a kitchen in a third world country that are blowing my mind when I'm reacting to them online. And yet you see singers who don't sing or like singers who dress up in freaking devil outfit costumes mm-hmm. at the Grammys or in their music videos, or just forget about even the devil angel religion thing. How about just being lewd and disgusting? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that people should have a platform, and it's my personal opinion, and I'm allowed to have one, guys. I don't think people should have a platform like that if they're not edifying, bringing inspiration, bringing hope, bringing courage, elevating the human condition. Because I think that we are remembered as a society based on those who withstand the test of time in the history books. And if we allow a platform so big to these people who make us look debased and lewd and stupid, mm-hmm. then that's kind of like the legacy of our generation. And I just think there's too much talent out there to try to like cherry pick those that don't fully in a 360 way deserve to be there. And I think it's the same in the acting industry. There's too much talent who would do who would do amazing things with their platform, you know?
I tend to agree with you. I like that answer.
I get really real passionate about that kind of stuff just because I as a vocal coach who reacts to a lot of people, mm-hmm. I see so much talent. Yeah. And it's so inspiring and amazing and frustrating.
Yeah, it amazes me. So I guess throwing that question back, it's like, what is something I wish I could change in the entertainment industry? That people who are unkind and just bad people don't get a platform to continue to work.
Right.
I always think, like, how is that person still working when they've done that?
Right, right. And it's brand power. You know,
exactly.
You know as well as I do. Yeah. You get too big to fail at some point, and mm-hmm. It's the same for big corporations. You get too big to fail, you get a bailout. You know, do it. And it's the same for people. It doesn't make it right, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Unless they've come to a place in their life where they've changed.
Yeah, where they change. And then it's a great redemption story.
Yeah.
One of the questions actually that some people wanted to ask you was, what is one of your biggest fears? Because you seem like you got it all together, Candace. I got to be honest with you. You seem like you got it all going on. So I don't think it's an unfair question, actually.
If I'm
going to
be honest with you, and because you do what you do.
Yeah.
Truly. And I don't even want to say this to you, but one of my biggest fears is singing in public, like singing live in public. I have massive anxiety at the thought of that. Yeah.
Wow.
And I've always wanted to sing.
You're so upfront. You're so upfront in everything that you do.
I know, which is weird, but I don't think I have a great voice, or I don't know how to use it, or have never taken lessons and all that kind of stuff. So even the few times that I've had to sing, like on Fuller House or in a Christmas movie, I'm always as soft as I possibly can be. And if I really do have to sing out loud, then I ask if we can pre-tape it and I can lip sync it, because I, like one time on Fuller House, we were doing a karaoke thing to Summer Lovin', which is like one of the best karaoke songs.
Right.
And during rehearsals, they were like, yeah, you guys just go ahead and sing. And I was like, oh, I'm not singing this live. I am not singing this live. And they're like, but it's karaoke. It's fine if it's not. And I was like, no. I'll have a panic attack. It's not happening. So I was like, please, I would like to have be pre-recorded and lip sync this so I at least can perform it.
Right, right.
Because I will be too petrified out of my mind to be able to perform it if I sing live.
I was not expecting you to say that. Okay, so I would be remiss if I didn't follow up with a challenge for you.
Okay.
I believe firmly that anybody can learn how to sing, because the voice is a muscle and you can train a muscle. You're fit, you work out, you know this to be true. So I dare you, I double dog dare you, Candace Cameron Bure, to let me show you. I double dog dare you to let me show you that you can sing. In fact, double points if it's not just like a single lesson thing, but if we do like a real go at it, like you do a before and after and I train you in between for like a while, like many lessons, and let's do a song before and after, and we will prove to you and to the world that anybody, including you, Miss, I have anxiety over singing, can learn how to sing. What do you say? Come on.
Do I get time to think about this?
No. It's now or never. The offer expires in 5 seconds.
Yeah. I'll do it.
It's on record. You cannot delete this. It's going up. It's being posted.
Listen, I'm a little bit skeptical. In that anyone can learn to sing. I don't think I'm tone deaf, so maybe I can learn to sing.
So you brought up a good point.
But I don't, like, I just don't think I have a pretty voice. So, okay. But I guess that's what you
can,
that's what I'm here for. You can teach me.
That's what I'm, okay. This is happening. I want you to know, like, we're going to finish this podcast and, like, we will be talking. We're going to set it up.
Okay.
Girl, you just wait. And by the way, to get to that tone deaf thing, only 2-5% of the entire world's population has congenital amusia. So there's congenital and there's acquired. So if you have head trauma or something happened to you, and you could have amusia, or it's hereditary. And literally though, 2-5%. So I've coached thousands of people in the world, all over the world, and I've never met one, and I have had them tested. I have never met one who has congenital or acquired amusia. You're not going to be the first one. Okay. So now that I've just made you sweat underneath your armpits by saying
totally,
yes, sorry.
Yeah.
What's something that gives you the greatest joy now? We'll pump it up.
Aside from my family, that's a gimme.
Yes. But, yes, it is a gimme.
But something that gives me such joy, honestly, I love my work so much. I do. Mm. And so when I've, and not even really the acting part, but all of the other, because I really am an entrepreneur. I have so many companies and businesses, and that thrills me. I love where I'm at in my life right now. So when I accomplish something that I've been working on, whether it's a film that I'm producing, whether it's a new piece of clothing, I mean, once I hit those and have that little baby, it's birthed. I'm so proud. It brings me such joy. I genuinely love what I do.
Mm. And that's so motivating. We'll leave this here right before we do our popcorn lightning round questions, which you don't know about, but it's happening. what would you say for someone who may not be feeling the same way? You know, I feel the same way, Candace. I love what I do. Mm. And so I am so motivated, inspired, and driven to get up and get at it every single day. But what about the person who's watching this, who's listening to us being like, wow, ladies, that's great for you, but like, I'm undervalued, or I don't love what I do. I just got stuck in it. What do you say to someone like that listening to this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it hurts my heart. I don't know that I have magical words that will help it, but I know how much God in my life and my prayer life means. And that I am certain that I would share that with that person to say, well, if you're not in a place that you want to be, or you feel stuck, have you been praying about it? Have you been talking to God about it? Because God knows your every thought anyway. Share them with him, and then listen to him and pursue him. Yeah. And I do that by actively praying and reading my Bible. So I know God's word. I know how to hear his voice. And God changes things. God makes mountains move. But you got to invite him in.
That's right. I love that. And that is something that anybody can do anywhere, at any place, time, or situation in their life. So I completely agree with that. Great advice, Candace. Thank you. Okay. Last thing, best thing.
Okay.
All right. This is my favorite thing to do with everybody. I'm going to grab my phone here shamelessly because these are fast. So you have 3 seconds or less to think of the answers to these questions. So put on the thinking cap, and here we go. Lightning round. Favorite TV show?
Full House.
Okay.
That was bad.
Favorite season of the year?
Fall.
Okay, me too. If you could have coffee with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and what would you ask them?
Lucille Ball, teach me all your comedy tricks.
Oh, that is such a good answer. So fast. I am impressed. That's a tough one.
I didn't get these answers ahead of time, by the way.
No, she didn't. I did this to her on purpose. Okay. She asked for questions ahead of time. I did not comply. Okay, ready? Favorite food?
Sushi.
Ooh. What's your guilty pleasure?
A pint of ice cream in front of television.
Indeed. Watching Great American Family. Yes. Shameless plug. Is it better to ask for permission or beg for forgiveness?
I like asking for permission.
Oh, you rule follower, you.
Sometimes I hate it. Sometimes I hate it, but that's who I am.
That's so cute. See, this is why you got in no trouble as a child star. That's the reason right there. I'd be like, I beg for forgiveness. Let's go. All right. What are you really curious about?
Oh, well, God. Okay. God, I'm really curious about him.
Yeah, he's a fascinating character indeed. Mm-hmm. What book are you currently reading? Not the Bible.
That's really the only book. Actually, I read that book every day, but I just started a book. I can't remember the name of it. I'm going to have to get it back. No. It's in my bag. Oh, here, I'll say this one. Because I just finished it. John Stamos's memoir, If You Would Have Told Me.
Oh, is it good?
It's fantastic.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. I love him. So, I had such a crush on him watching Full House. Okay. Okay, good. Uncle Jesse. Have mercy. Okay, if you had to be a Disney character, which one would it be?
Ariel.
Okay. A singer. If someone broke into your phone right now, like right this second, what would be your most highly Googled topic?
Shall we take a look?
Yes, why not?
Oh, airlines. Airlines. Ugh. They're just it's all the check-ins, they're all on my Google. It's every airline.
You fly all the time, don't you? Life. Bless your heart. Flying is not fun. I don't know. I don't think I lived in an era when it was, but flying is not fun anymore. All right. Last question.
Okay.
You're dropped into a city. Besides your phone, what's the one thing you have to have?
Money.
You know that no one has answered that yet?
Seriously?
They've not said money. No. It's a very practical answer.
I'm dropped in a city. I'm like, I want to go to the Dior store. I'm going to head up to Gucci. I want a good meal. I want a fabulous hotel to stay in. I want to go shopping and have a great time.
Money, honey. That's hilarious. So practical. So smart. So funny. Candace, thank you so much for being on today. I just love you. And we will be talking because I am holding you. Real tight, I'm holding you to your challenge that you just accepted. Guys, you heard it here. Next time you hear from Candace and me, she's going to be singing. You just wait and see. Love you guys, proud of you, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Thanks, Tara. Bye.